Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I know I'll never understand how you feel. I'm like, you know what? If my house burned down, you'd have a pretty good idea as to how to fix something. You don't know. Your house is still there, but I'm pretty sure you could imagine if your house wasn't there.
Yeah.
So you do have an idea.
What up, everybody?
It's the Preachers and Seekers podcast.
I'm about to head out of state for the week, and I wanted to get this podcast out super quick to you guys because I absolutely love the conversation that I had with my homie Wordsplay this week. We talked about all things Christian hip hop, comedy, the state of the country right now. It was challenging and hilarious, thought provoking, and super interesting. So sit back and tune in for the next hour or so. I know you won't regret it. And I appreciate you spending the time. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, as well as follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Preachers and Sneakers. Okay, let's get to my conversation with Wordsplay. So sitting here with my Instagram friend, hopefully real friend soon, Wordsplay, John Itiola. How do you say your last name?
It's Itiola.
Itiola, so I completely butchered it.
Itiola, no, it's okay.
We met via Instagram, I guess sometime last year, and you were kind enough to let me use some of your music for my intro to the podcast, which I was super grateful for because I'm still just figuring this thing out, and so any help is appreciated. So to have real music as an intro and not like royalty-free SoundCloud vlog intro music was super nice, and I got a lot of compliments on the music and stuff because initially I tried to make my own beats for it, and very quickly I got the feedback, what is this intro this intro is trash. Thanks for spending the time with me. And you're in San Diego currently, right?
I live in San Diego. I've been here for almost 10 years now.
10 years.
New York originally, but here for almost 10 years now.
So you grew up in New York? Is that what you said? Cut out a little bit.
Yeah.
Grew up in New York. You went to, what was the name of the school? Maritime?
I went to the State University in New York Maritime Academy, SUNY Maritime.
SUNY Maritime Academy. And then we were talking offline about you immediately going into the Navy as an officer. I assume people are surprised by that with you being a rapper now.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, not a lot of people know. I don't even think not a lot of people know what an officer is first. So, they're just like, oh man, you were in the Army? That's crazy. And I'm like, nah
pretty far from it.
Yeah. It's not something you see every day. I remember getting out and one of my bosses, I was sitting down with him and he was like, man, so you're going to do the music thing when you get out. wow. And I was like, yeah, sir, like that's my plan. He was like, man, that's great. But like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you literally just said it. Like, you literally just said what I plan on doing. He was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But like, no, I mean, sure. Like, you know, when that doesn't work out, like go back to school, job, you're gonna try and get back in. Like, I get it, you know, wanna try something out. And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, smokes, like this is he might be right, you know. I'm
yeah.
I kind of don't have a plan B. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not great as a new creator finally deciding, hey, I'm gonna be vulnerable and put my stuff out there and depend on this thing that is completely uncertain, and then have everyone in your circle or like former bosses be like, all right, yeah, I mean, clearly it's not going to work out. And it's interesting how people in the military just can't ever consider anything outside of the military. At least my superiors were like, all right, but I mean, you're going to stay in the reserves, right? I mean, you don't want to give up your, I mean, you're going to work towards retirement, right? In the reserves. And I said, no, I'm done. Like, I don't want to come back and do this.
Yeah, I thought about the reserves. I just, oh God, I can't. Oh, you're having a great month. It's day 26.
Yep.
And then you got to shave and put on your uniform. No, I couldn't.
Stay
I
in couldn't. Shape on your own motivation. The green weenie attacks every month. And then there's probably some amount of, at least as an officer, some amount of paperwork that you got to catch up on. And then you get paid $500.
It's like a second wife, I bet. Or like, it's like a third kid if you have two kids. You know, it's just another very dynamic relationship to manage.
Yeah. So
that had a lot of say in your life. So I couldn't.
Same. I mean, I was once you know, they take your pound of flesh out of you. And after that, I was ready to move on too. So great. you did your, you got out and immediately started rapping. What did the transition look like? Did you already have shows lined up, or were you planning on?
Well, here's the thing. What's cool is that same boss that made me question my existence was also cool enough a year earlier to let me take 61 days of leave.
Whoa.
61 days of leave to go on the Uncomfortable Tour with Andy Mineo and Propaganda.
Oh, and, snap.
So I was on shore duty then for you guys. That's kind of like your desk job in the military. After you're in the fleet, you know, you're going to Afghanistan, you're going to Japan or Korea, you know,
yep.
Boots on the ground, winning hearts and minds, putting warheads on foreheads.
Yeah, more like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, after all that, they rotate you to like a desk job where you're doing that paperwork and admin and stuff like that. So during that, I had a really good team that was working for me. They knew way more than I did. So I was essential, but only so I could sign things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You were the scapegoat for anything that went wrong, but that was about it.
That was about it. And those guys were so good. Nothing ever really went wrong. So
that's such an awesome thing though, to work with people that are so proficient.
Yeah, it was incredible. These guys were all, you know, it was probably like 160 years of combined experience, these guys.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Incredible. So
you went on tour with Mineo, Prop, Gavi. I watched a deal with Prop this morning. He was talking to Triple E, I think, on Instagram. And I was
they did that Porigami thing he still hasn't invited me to.
Yeah, that's kind of messed up. Do you keep in touch with him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Great friends with that guy.
He seems like a really interesting, multifaceted dude.
The guy's like six dimensional.
Yeah. And it makes me like self-conscious for my own like existence in the world, because like, dude, I care about these things and I love my wife. I love my faith. I've got this Instagram account, but he's like thinking deeply about like social change issues as well as coffee and entrepreneurship and rap or hip hop. Like he's a pretty impressive dude. And I didn't really know about him until.
He's just a really curious guy. One thing I love about him is he just loves, he like really, really loves being informed. And I think he despises not being informed. So, which is just great. Like, so, I mean, he's just like, what do I got to do to be a dad? Let me get information. And he's just always trying to get information, that guy.
That's dope.
So anything he's interested in, he's like, okay, now that I'm interested, I got to get informed.
That's awesome. Really. So you went on tour with them. What did it look like to prep for your first tour like that? I mean, you're fresh out. You got the haircut still. You got the abs still from the Navy.
Yeah, I looked great back then. God, I looked great.
I watched some videos that, like, it must have been early music videos of yours where your head was completely bald, no beard or anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Had the deployment lice-free haircut. Had the Fifth Fleet lice-free haircut back then. It was strange. One, I wasn't ready. I was terrible.
Oh, snap.
That's okay. Everybody.
Like, objectively, everyone was like, all right, yeah, you probably weren't ready.
No. Let me think. Maybe. Maybe, you know.
I'm not saying you were. I'm trying to get into
your
head.
I've never been brave enough to ask.
Right.
But
I would be the same, I think.
But in hindsight, yeah, you know, I wasn't ready. But who is, you know? And I was lucky. I was really lucky. I had a friend that was leveraging his platform to put on a friend.
Yeah.
You know, who gets that? So I like cut to the front of the line and they raised the velvet rope thing for me. And I just breezed into the club.
That's so dope. And you got out in what, 2015?
I got out. That was in 2016. I was on tour. I got out a year later.
See, that's crazy. Like Mineo was full. Like he was popping.
It was hot.
Yeah. And so he just let you who is this guy? Words played.
He just got on his roller coaster and let me sit on his lap. That's what he did.
That is so, I mean, what a good friend. Like he definitely didn't have to do that. And he's got a lot of friends, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah. He really, he took care of me. He gave me a second life, really. Not that I couldn't have done it alone, but for me, that's how it worked out.
Yeah. Know? I mean, it's super helpful to have. I mean, it takes work to build a platform like that and to just have access to it. I mean, has to be super great. I mean, you're starting to make money like right out the gate.
That never happens.
Oh, making money?
No, I'm just saying. Oh, you know, for me, it happened. It just that never happened.
Yeah.
So I was really lucky.
But to be fair, you're also talented. Now, maybe you weren't great at the beginning, but at least for me, I'm a big fan of your voice and your lyrics and stuff. So like your voice sticks out where
you know what I think those are things he used to always say. And I think this was his way of almost, just kind of confirm back in what he was saying. He's kind of, you know, I don't know. He proven to himself he's right almost, you know, like, hey, you're really talented and I'm going to show you why.
Yeah.
You know, and he you know, kind of made an incubator to show me why.
That's tight.
An ecosystem for me to flourish. And I did, you know, and now I'm like, oh, I can. Yeah, I could do this. I'm actually kind of good at this. I didn't think I was for the longest, but now I see it.
Yeah, because it's such a nebulous concept to say, yeah, I'm going to be a full-time rapper. And not only that, like Mineo's in the Christian hip-hop space. And so like, I'm going to be I don't know how you classify yourself, but I'm going to be aligned with the Christian hip-hop space full-time. And I'm going to support my family that way. It's got to be at least.
Old strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old strategy there.
It's a, yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting to kind of.
But you want to know what? It never works out like you do. You never, things will never look the way you want them to, ever. Ideally,
yeah.
You never go towards your ideals, but at the same time, things will work out really well in ways you didn't think. That's what the flip side of that I try to tell people and remind myself, like, just because it's not going ideally doesn't mean it's not going to work out. It's, you know, really good things will happen, I think, if you stick with it. Look at you. I mean,
the pinnacle of success.
Smokes. Are you kidding me? New York Times hasn't called me. All right. Like I know that much.
Well, they haven't called me in a while, which is fine, but hopefully they will again. That was pretty cool. And as you can see, it's a pretty underwhelming interview they got
from me. But yeah, I mean, it's cool to have a, you're right. Like, things never work out how you think they're going to work out, but no, there's also the chance that it could be a lot better. I remember seeing somebody on Twitter, maybe it was Jamie Torkowski or something, like, for a kind of a saying that you say if you're feeling anxiety or you're thinking like, dude, what if this or this happens? It's going to be terrible. And just changing the narrative, saying like, what if it actually all works out? Or what if I actually don't bomb? Or what if I actually do succeed in this? I think it's a helpful kind of way to change the mindset. So you kind of broke out in the scene in 2016. What does the name come from? Have you talked much about
where? No, I have no clue where the name comes from.
It's just catchy.
Yeah, it's actually really terrible in a sense that, like, oh man, words play. You know, it's cheesy. I think it's, but I don't like the whole rap name thing. I thought it was kind of cheesy, but I was like, my name, that no one's gonna be able to pronounce that. And there's worse names out there, and people love them. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just make some up.
I've always heard it is like names, kind of like you said, just don't matter. I mean, look at who's famous, like DJ Snake or like so many people that it's just their names, like Andy Mineo. I mean, there's no creativity there objectively. It's a great name, but it's interesting, or it's hard not to get swept up into kind of those small details, I would think.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is, there's some aspect where it does have to be digestible. Unless you're like XXX Tentacion, like,
hey, that worked out. You know, look at, you know, like, I'm just like, I actually, it's a perfect example where I'm like, it was great. And people just called him X after a while.
Right.
You know? So yeah, no one really matters.
Especially like this year, nothing matters.
Nothing matters.
Yeah. 1,000%. So speaking of, like, what are you up to now? Like, what does your career look like now?
It's actually really cool. I don't think I've really released anything in over a year. Last year was really brutal. We had a really, my wife and I had just a really tough year. Mm. You know, just some personal stuff, some health stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a tough year. She lost her father. So the last like 15 months has been really brutal. But the good news is I'm like still here paying a rent somehow. Like, I realized that dawned on me. And that's when I was like, oh man, I do this full time. Like, that's what famous people do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we're literally talking at 11 a.m. on a Friday.
Shit, like, what the nerve, really, like the gall to be sitting here talking. You and I, we're not wealthy. We're not affluent. Like, you know,
but that's wealth right there, where you can, I mean, having a schedule like that.
It really is, man. It really is. And I'm at the point now where I'm like, you know what? That's, if I could be there in life, I don't need awards. I don't need a lot of money. If I could just maintain, that's the Ferrari lifestyle for me. Like, just your own schedule. Like at 11, I can hit you up and then I can wrap up here and be like, all right. Xbox or PlayStation. You know,
like, that's it. Yeah, boys?
Yeah. I really could if I wanted. And that's a miracle.
Yeah.
That's such a miracle. I can't believe that's my life. You and I, you know, I know how much you made as an officer. Us walking away from six-figure salaries.
Yep.
Us walking away from health benefits, married, you know, walking away from health benefits.
Housing.
A pension 10 years from now, guaranteed, you know, 60 a year for the rest of our lives, housing, and it working out. You know, it's kind of worked out. It's not perfect, but it kind of worked out, man. So I'm really grateful right now. And two, to answer your question, I just had to reflect on that.
Sure.
I think it's really cool. And you nailed it. That's wealth. That's wealth, man.
So quickly you realize how little things can bring to you. And for the longest time, I was really trying to make money so I could get a dope house, get a dope car, go on dope vacations. But when you're doing that and sacrificing like 60 hours of your week and then stressing about it off of those hours during the week, dude. And like most people do that. That's hell. And I just can't, in the same way as you, like so many things have been gifted to me, like platform, money for this thing that I have never, would have never cooked up strategically. So it's a thing where it's like, I feel responsibility to like steward it well so that I'm not, you know, waking up and playing PlayStation all day, but, but just to, I'm with you. I'm just saying I'm with you in that, like finding contentment and gratitude and that you can have a more, like not set an alarm. That's wealth.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Holy smokes. And there's still so much work to do, you know, still stuff I want to do. Stuff I'll fail at probably.
But it's so much different when you're controlling the time that you spend on those things. Like I'm happy to work Friday nights if it's me choosing to work on something that I, that is going to further like whatever creative pursuit I have. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, man. Right now though, I'm focusing a lot on, actually a lot on comedy right now at the moment. I just haven't, I haven't been able to write music for, over a year now.
Because you dropped the lo-fi. You had the two lo-fi singles.
I got the two, you know, lo-fi short, you know, extended plays that came out. And I got another one that's going to come out this year.
Nice.
That's already done. I got, you know, some music with Andy coming out. But I haven't been able to make new music, like good music for a while. And I think that, you know what? Fine. That's okay. It'll come back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The comedy stuff, I realized, man, in the last year, the little money, there's little shekels I was able to make. It was comedy. It was all through comedy.
How? I mean, a lot of people don't know that you're like involved with comedy or like comedy. I mean, people see you as a rapper, I'm sure, mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about that.
Well, you know, I think I'm more so of an entertainer at this point. That's what I plan on being, you know. Yeah. I look at Reggie Watts, mm-hmm. Or Fred Armisen, you know, Flight of the Conchords, Kate Micucci, you know, artists like that that have found a way to blend these things on stage and just kind of
like Fred doing the comedy for drummers. Did you watch that?
You don't really know what they're doing anymore. You just know you're being entertained and you want to be there. I think that's the space I'm entering into. Zach Fox, another great example.
What drew you to that?
I don't know. I'm not cool enough to be a rapper. When I watch Andy on stage, for example, I'm like, God, this guy's incredible. He'll do like three incredible songs. And then he'll do a monologue and, you know, there's people weeping, there's marriages being saved, there's kids quitting drugs, you know, runaways are returning to their families. And then he'll do like three more incredible songs and then he'll do another monologue and do it again.
Sell a bunch of merch.
And then he'll sell 15 grand in merch and just, you know, hang it up at the end of the night. Me, I go out on stage, I got a glass of whiskey in my hand or a beer, you know, like I'm stumbling. My iPad's not working. So I got to tell jokes, you know, and I'm just so much more comfortable doing that for some reason.
That's dope.
I don't know.
Cause that's terrifying to a lot of people.
Right. Because there's some guys I know that if they couldn't be a leader, if they couldn't be a reverent presence on stage, right? It's vulnerable and it's scary.
Yeah.
For me, it's the opposite. Being like in a leadership position or a place of reverence and seriousness, that's horrifying to me. That's like worst case scenario, you know, but when I get to go up there and just kind of raise hell and bring absurdity and almost confusion and disorientation.
Like, who is this guy?
Yeah, that's a high for me. But you know what? The ultimate high is people feeling less insecure about themselves.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at me. So they're not thinking about themselves. They're either laughing at me or they're laughing with me, or they're feeling a little less bad about themselves because I'm up there like making light of things.
Yeah.
And you could see that happen in the audience. When I get to see that, that's when I'm like, all right, this feels really, 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 really good.
Yeah. And just like, I'm sure you appreciate, or I know you appreciate other comics, and just there's nothing like someone being able to genuinely make you belly ache laugh. And that does so much to my soul when I see, who was I watching the other day? I was watching, you ever watch Andrew Schultz?
Yeah.
His crowd work. I mean, he's a little raunchy, but he has such a clear talent to do crowd work and just make funny out of nothing. Yep. And that stirs something in me that nothing else can, like pure laughter, pure joy, and appreciating somebody's talent to be able to get up there in complete silence and have one single light pointed at them and then them control a whole crowd's worth of people's emotions. That's incredible to me.
That's the high for me. That's it. Maybe I'm a huge narcissist. Not narcissist. Maybe I'm a, what's the word? A sociopath.
Where the embarrassing nugget in your brain doesn't click off or click on.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yes. I control. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It's just, it's almost like, making a friend a steak and watching them eat it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you like that, don't you?
That's me.
Yeah, it's a high for sure.
Or a love language, either one.
Maybe, yeah. At its worst, I guess it's a high and a control thing. I don't think it's that for me. That's what I've always been good at, you know, class clown in high school.
Yeah.
Just always getting in trouble. But I was never disrespectful to teachers. I was always making my peers. I was always doing, you know, crazy stuff to make my friends laugh.
And yeah.
Trying to get them to animate. I wanted to see people pop. I love when a crowd pops.
Yeah. Or even just like one-on-one. I've never done, well, strike that. I did a stand-up competition once in high school, a sophomore in high school, and was not funny. But I remember ever since then, that idea of making someone laugh just from your words and your perspective and people genuinely thinking you're funny is one of the best feelings. Like, I love to make people laugh. I mean, that's why I like doing this account, or that's why I originally like doing this account, is to make people laugh. And and then I started pissing a bunch of people off. But
that was what drew me to your account, though. I realized, even from just God, I saw your account and I immediately envied you. because I was like, God, this is such a good idea. And I wish I was the guy that got to bring people to this feeling in this moment, because it's so funny.
Like that irritation you feel like, gosh, I could have easily thought of this thing or that joke and someone else did it. And now it's done.
The brilliant thing I think about your, you know, what you do for a living, what you got to do with the account.
My wife is super proud.
Yeah. Yeah. The brilliant thing is you made your wife proud. So,
right. She's so sick of it.
Yeah. The brilliant thing I think is just, if you could get people to animate and emote, you're doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have the range. You have the range.
It's interesting.
Imagine what your direct messages look like too. But
my therapy bill went way up.
Tripled. All the money you made, you're still in the red because of
straight to the therapy.
Medical expenses. Yeah.
Because it is a, since the beginning, it has surprised me how such a novel, meaningless thing was able to open up everyone's life hurts and insecurities and irritations about Christians or non-Christians. Or, I mean, I've had conversations with people about every like people think 12 different things about my account. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people think I'm this strategic, like theological person that's trying to erode the prosperity gospel or the skinny jean preachers. And other people think that I am trying to erode the Christian faith. Like people have literally messaged me like, how could you divide? How could you like risk people's faiths by doing this account when literally I was like, hey, these shoes cost $1,200. And from the beginning, like I very rarely was made much of a commentary on it one way or the other. It was more like, dude, this seems ridiculous to me. And a lot of other people think it's ridiculous. And, but people, I guess what I was trying to say is people project their view of all these different yes. things on the account, and all that happening at one in one place has been, you know,
I love it. People, yeah, people definitely hitch their wagon of hurt.
Yes.
And your daddy issues to what you were doing and make it, it's immediately make it about themselves. You yes. know?
Yeah. And it's oh. like so quickly you could see that. And the whole time I had to sit in the middle, like, dude, I mean, y'all decide what you think about this. I have my own thoughts about it, but I'm also, I can also see both sides. Like, why are y'all Let getting pissed?
Let me ask you this. And this is, I don't ask you this as an indictment, but really just to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you think that could or is cowardly? Let me ask you why. Let me ask you why. And I ask that question because sometimes I have to think about myself and I'm like, man, am I being a coward here? Am I yeah. not doing or taking one side? Here's the thing. I heard Malcolm Gladwell talking about, he was talking about the presidential election in 2000.
He's so good.
Or eight, I can't remember, when Sarah Palin was running and Tina Fey, I mean, knocked it out of the park with that
yeah.
impression.
Yeah,
that
yeah. they did.
And, you know, Amy Poehler is Hillary Clinton. But Tina Fey just murders for a few weeks. And then they brought Tina Fey, they brought Sarah Palin onto SNL. Like, after a few of those, they actually brought her on. And Malcolm Gladwell said that was cowardly, he thought. It was cowardly satire because they didn't, because they flopped. He said they flopped. He said you were criticizing Sarah Palin, and then you brought her on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Confusing. You let her off the hook, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think you've done now that I think about it.
Today's episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast is brought to you by the Upper Room Daily Devotional Guide. You can count on the Upper Room for daily inspiration, daily community, and daily prayer. It's the only devotional magazine written by readers, ordinary people, people who have encountered God in daily situations. The Upper Room is here for you every day through your email, a custom app, or printed magazine. Enjoy a free 30-day trial of the email or app service by visiting upperroom.org/welcome. That's upperroom.org/welcome to get your first 30 days free. And now back to my conversation with Words Played.
What is it your place or my place to be like, this is wrong or this is perfectly fine? Or, yeah. I don't, and me personally, I don't think what you're doing is cowardly. I think you nailed it. I think you,
thank
God. I can't reiterate how jealous I am of, just hire me part-time to write your captions. Put me on a retainer, a small retainer. I just want to be a part of what you do.
Okay.
But seriously, like, did you ever feel that, like, man, I should be saying more? Or
yeah, only maybe all the time. So people have called me or implied that I'm a coward all the time. I mean, it's kind of like a weekly thing. I mean, at first it was every day. People were like,
yeah,
and people got really pissed. But the thing I stuck to was that I never, and like, there's a lot here. So I never started this thing to say whether or not it was good or bad. I made
right.
five videos about like, did you know that this pastor is wearing $500 shoes? And at the time I was a little irritated because for some reason I just had never considered the finances around preaching and being a pastor. Like my thought was that every pastor ever makes 65 a year, is kind of poor, and but also gets hooked up by their congregation. This whole concept of like these guys making real wealth off of being just pastors stirred something within me, but I didn't know if it was wrong or right. I just knew that it stirred something within me. And again, like people think I have a strategy or think that I know what I'm doing, but I literally posted this just to my personal friends. And then somebody encouraged me to like start the account and I thought up the name. And so people will think I'm a coward if they think that I am here to call these guys out and say, what you're doing is sinful. Jesus never did this. Mother Teresa never did this. And I'm much more moderate when it comes to things like that, because it's like, or at least I'm empathetic enough to know, like, this dude literally is best friends with Justin Bieber, and Justin Bieber's worth $1 billion.
For sure.
And it's nothing for Justin Bieber to say, hey, here's $50K worth of clothes from Barney's. Right. And so you as Karen or Joe Schmo sitting behind your computer see that and you're like, how could you? You need to give more money to the poor. When in fact, like all these situations are different. So if you see me as somebody that is actually here to call these guys out and call Carl Lentz out and say, Carl, how could you? Then yeah, I would be a coward. But if people like spent the time to kind of listen a little bit or kind of read through some of the stuff I've done, they would realize that I'm more moderate. But to your point about the Sarah Palin thing, I've had to adapt this whole time. Like people have wanted me to stick with my original content from the very beginning. And I think that in itself would be disingenuous because I guess by having done this for a year, I understand more the nuance and I've heard from some of them. And then some people will say, well, they're just manipulating you by becoming friends with you in order to get the stuff taken out. I'm like, yes. Okay. If you want to be a conspiracy theorist about everything.
At that point though, you can't really win. At that point, it's like, okay, you just want me to wave your flag.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing I've had to battle because people really have wanted me to further their agenda. So like there were some people at Mosaic that really had left Mosaic in LA and really didn't like Irwin McManus. And they wanted me to keep like posting about Irwin McManus and sharing about all these different things that they didn't like about Mosaic. Or people had left Hillsong in New York City and hated Carl and wanted me to keep pounding these guys for, you know, seemingly getting rich off the gospel. And my whole deal is like, I'm going to post whatever I want when I want. Like there's no rules around this. So I've become secure in that I'm not hiding behind account. There was a time where I was trying to be wise, where I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know if people are going to come like bust down my door because they're so pissed that people now know how much their sneakers are worth. But very quickly I was like, people don't care that much. It's an interesting question. Like I got the same question, or David Nasser at Liberty kind of implied the same things. Like, aren't you being kind of a hypocrite by doing this behind an Instagram account? And I said, well, I'm not a news platform, but all I'm doing is showing people the facts that, yo, that Supreme tea sold for $1,200 yesterday. That's it. And here's a joke.
So it's weird, but that would be my pushback to a Malcolm Gladwell, where I'm like, but was that the agreement going into this that Tina Fey, that's her responsibility, that's her duty.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. Maybe you had that internal expectation. And that's okay. You know, like, that's what you wanted out of her and she didn't do it.
Yeah.
Should you be critical? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, then should you be critical? And I think, ultimately, that's just being in the public. Like, being a public figure.
Just something. People want you to do what they want you to do based on their own minute experience in life.
Yeah.
But as somebody that both of us, like in the public eye, we have to be able to kind of compartmentalize some of that or filter through what's true and what's not. So like people would, so I posted that deal with Carl and TD Jakes. Like I disagree with TD Jakes's theology significantly, but he had some good comments about living as a Christian black man and wanting to be treated the same as white dudes in the same position. And I posted it and people automatically thought that I was now promoting these two guys. What I was doing was promoting their conversation because I enjoyed the conversation.
Right.
But people got so upset that I would stoop so low as to cave on my initial mission and elevate these two guys. When in fact, like I'm just a dude with a phone and posting stuff once I feel like posting it. I mean, that's literally.
And you never said what your initial mission was. So who are they to like, what reference point does anyone have aside from their own internal,
you
know, which is really strange to me.
So yeah, it took me a while because I thought I was being treated unfairly because people don't understand. People don't know what I'm doing. Like people don't realize I'm joking, but there's no managing that or like there's no, especially like same for you as a creator, you can't make anybody understand what you're doing or why you're doing it. You're going to have fans, you're going to have haters. Or
I used to do this, you know, pity party for myself.
Like if they just knew me, if they just knew me as a person.
Yeah. And you know what? One, nobody cares.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Even if they did, nobody cares. Yeah. One, they don't want to know you. But two, man, like you're right. You just kind of got to do your thing.
Yeah.
Kind of just got to wake up, do your job the best way you can. Speak up when you got to, too. Do the right thing when, you know, you feel really compelled. You posting that thing about TD Jakes, that's more important than what you think. At that time, it's way more important than what you think about anyone's theology.
Yeah. Facts.
You know what I mean? Oh, shit. Like this guy's talking about some stuff that actually matters here. I don't care if he's wearing a Margiela jacket, which is hilarious to me. TD Jakes in a Margiela store is just funny. But like this is way more important. But still, even you doing that, absolutely reprehensible. How could they? And I'm like, you know what? All right.
The fact that I can control people's emotions with that little amount of like influence is more power than I think I need to have. Because it can really be a drug. But we started talking about all this about your doing comedy, and I'm interested in that. Are you talking about like, do you go do stand up regularly at the clubs in San Diego, or like, what does comedy look like for you?
Well, that's a great question, and this is where I will truly be outed as a coward. Comedy stand up is horrifying to me. Stand up comedy is Rucker Park. If you're a basketball player, you know, I feel like stand-up comedy is, sheesh, I don't know. That is the ultimate test, going into a room and convincing people that I feel like are there to be proven to.
Yes.
That you're funny, you know? So yeah, done a good amount of stand-up gigs. I need to do more because it's just a place where you get good at being a comic,
But it's terrifying. And as an unknown comic, you don't have the additional capital of having fans. Like Jerry Seinfeld can walk on stage and not say a word and people will laugh.
Right. He could just make a face and people will be like, I get it. You know? Yeah. But you get that with time. And that's fair too. But even I was reading a Seinfeld interview where he was like, even I can't fool my audience. I got to be funny. I got to stay sharp.
And fresh.
That guy's at clubs every night. He works in his studio all day. He finds a club on his way home. He finds a club to do a set at, and then he goes home. And I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to start. I think that's what I'm going to do once this, you know, disaster is over with.
Yeah.
I'm just going to work here. I'm at my studio now. Go to a club. But, I mean, I'm fortunate. One, it's the internet era.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I have a pre-existing fan base.
Yeah.
You know,
that's nice.
At least a small percentage of it's willing to listen to me here and is already.
And understand your.
Yep. Gets the context. Mean. Yeah. So I've been, you know, fortunately I've gotten to eat off that where, you know, got a few gigs. got to do some, you know, some voiceover work. And
you got a great voice. Like, I was listening to you this morning, like your recorded stuff, Spotify, YouTube, and everything. If y'all haven't, make sure you go listen to him, because your voice is so freaking good. It's deep.
Thank you.
And it's got body to it. And it's it sticks out. It's not some of this mumble rap bullshit. It's like lyrical and it's enunciated, but it's also powerful. I love it, man. And I think you're incredibly underrated given your voice and your lyrics. And maybe some of that is like you not taking yourself as seriously maybe as you could, trying to be humble. But I think your voice is incredible.
Thanks. Yeah, my voice is a seller for sure. And I think the way I look is a seller for sure.
Great beard.
The beard is
incredibly manicured.
Oh my gosh. I think I might cut my hair. I was running. I went for a jog the other day and I looked in a window. I was like, dear God, like I look, it's bad. I look like a mountain man, and I gained weight. So it's just the big hair and the muffin top. Just, they don't work together.
Yeah. This year's
one got to go. This muffin top ain't going anywhere. So it's, it's gotta be the hair. But, you know, got to do a gig for NBC, which was really, really great. That was cool.
What? You know, doing what?
I got to be on this show called Off the Dribble that NBC does, NBC Sports. And they, it was really great. I mean, Jacques Slade.
Oh, Cousteau. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jacques Slade is great. He hosts a show called Off the Dribble, or hosted a show when the NBA was a thing. So yeah, it should be
sports were a thing.
Yeah. And,
I was supposed to link up with him in LA the last time I was there, but our schedules didn't align.
That's great. I bet he follows you and is aware of you.
Super nice dude.
Super great guy, really talented, just really, you know, just a great speaker. And
man, content.
I got the gig to be on this show, and I found out a bit about it like on a Sunday night or a Monday, and I had to be there on a Wednesday, and I was like, oh my gosh, I got nothing. Like, I'm not ready for this. But I was like, oh, hey, NBC, could we reschedule? Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, like, I'm not gonna. So I just write for 2 days, hop in my car, go up to LA, did this gig, and I was fortunate, man. I killed. Like, I killed. Came out really well. It's nice. All online and stuff. Just search Off the Dribble, words played or whatever.
Heck yeah.
It was incredible. And it was me. Like, I went up there. I was like a hip-hop correspondent on this show. So I was like rapping about NBA news. So it was really simple. It wasn't hard, but, or I thought it was simple, but it went really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the producers, the director, Jacques was like, dude, you did great.
It's a great feeling.
And I got in my car and drove home. You know, I left NBC Studios, got in our Kia and drove home.
It's like, well, I guess this is what it feels like.
Yeah. I was like, this is it. Just crashing back down to earth.
Gosh.
Drove back to San Diego. And I was like, oh man, this is what I do. And I'm damn good at it too. Like, I was, it was like a, you know, I just kind of leveled up a little bit. I was like, this is what I do.
Yeah.
Like, it was a realization.
That's dope.
And you know, a couple of days later, a couple guys at NBC just emailed me like, hey man, like, you know, the guy's back out east. Like, they, as they say, he's like, the guy's back out east. They actually really like this. Like, we need to talk about, you know, just getting to work together in the future. So
that would get me so psyched. Were you pumped?
I was. That's when I realized. I was like, this is what I do. Like, it was weird. I was like, oh, wow. I'm a professional. Like, I show up.
I'm an entertainment.
I do the damn thing, and I leave with my check. You know, like, and I was like, that's it. That's the goal. That's the plan for the next 20 years. And
that's
then,
so tight.
So it was, that's when I was like, you know, let's focus on comedy a little bit more. And I think this summer, I'll fly out to the woods somewhere and work on music again.
Yeah.
For now, I'm just like, let me focus on some comedy stuff.
So focusing on comedy, I mean, what is your, because I think about this too. It's like, I know that there's not, I don't think there's a long-term job in this for me, just commenting on preacher's footwear, but I do like the whole entertainment piece. Like, I like making people laugh. I like comedy. I like, you know, writing copy for the deal. What is your writing process look like when you say, like, I'm sitting down to write? Like, are you writing monologues? Are you writing freaking one-liners or what?
So, you know, I'll write bits, you know, just for stand-up that I'll use on stage. But I think the way the internet's worked, the way the internet works now is cool because you could just live there as a comedian. And I do really well when I write series, like a series of work. Like my wife's an artist. She's a painter. And I learned this from her. She'll be like, man, I'm in this headspace. I'm thinking about this thing. The next 10 paintings are going to be around this theme and this idea. Mm. I'm just going to focus on that. So what I do now is I create worlds, I think. I create a world around a theme. So if you look at all my music videos from the last 2 years, it's all VHS. Essentially making fun of VHS public access TV.
Yeah.
It's just all around the 90s, entertainment in the 90s, like C-grade entertainment in the 90s, though.
Yeah. Like 4 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, Queen's Scheme. Yeah, 4 a.m. VHS. You know, community programming, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really terrible. Bad audio, intentionally bad. Filipino karaoke videos we use as references for a lot of my lyric videos. Those were all the references, and we that's what we worked on for 2 years, man. Hmm.
And then you toured on that, right? You did it, or you?
Toured on it. And you know what? Like, I look at the numbers now, and the numbers are great online. Like. But I'm not making any money off it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I wish I was, you know, like, not a lot of people have seen it. But, you know, it's weird. My favorite comic and now a friend, you know, Fred Armisen saw it and it got his attention. And, you know, we're buddies now.
Are you really?
Yeah, you know, and...
He's hilarious.
He's my hero. He's the standard. I'm like, if I could do that for a living, then I've made it, you know? And I DM'd him, you know, shot in the dark.
Yeah.
And sent him some of the Low Fidelity Hour stuff. I was like, hey, man, like, you really inspire me. I think we create in similar ways. Like, I'd love your feedback on this. And he was like, this is hilarious. Here's my email. And just took off from there.
That's tight.
And I was like, oh, so it was totally worth it. The 2 years of not making any money.
Even just for that one relationship.
That relationship and that mentor in my career where I'm at now, I'm like, I think that's what I'm just going to do for the next, I don't know, 5 years. Just keep creating these worlds, these immersive worlds. So I got one coming next week, actually. That's when's this thing going to come out? When is our episode going to come out this week?
Next week, maybe. I mean, whenever, really. What medium?
I'm good. Essentially, I'm gonna take on like the self-help Gary Vee, Grant Cardone, Tony Robbins.
Who's the guy with the Ferraris on?
Oh God, the guy that interrupts your YouTube videos.
Yes, yes.
I don't remember his name.
Ty Lopez.
Ty Lopez,
yeah.
Dave Ramsey,
yeah. You
know, Christians love that guy, so I have to make fun of him. So yeah, that's what, as a comedian, that's what I do, I think, and that's what I'm.
It sounds like you got a lot of things percolating that could all, like Fred Armisen and having an NBC, like just having the resume build as far as a comic, that's huge. Like now you have stuff to point to that even if Fred has got. Hey, like I'm looking for a writer. I'm looking for whatever. He can point to that and be like, dude, you got to check this guy out. Instead of like, yeah, I've got this guy. He's really funny.
Yeah, right. And that's why it's so important. Even with you, saying like, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, make fun of guys' Yeezys forever. I can't, you know. But it's, and I'd say for every creative, it's important. It's the reason it's important to make things and go all out and make it. I was I remember this Kanye West interview I was watching, and he was talking about the Yeezus tour, you know, where he had the mountain inside. He had a full cast. It snowed, you know, he had the outfits. It was so ridiculous and absurd and glorious.
Very Kanye, yeah.
It was massive. He went into incredible debt because of this thing.
Oh, really?
He went, yeah, you know, 7 figures into debt because of that tour.
Jeez.
Took on so much debt, lost so much money. And he said the reason he did it, though, was so when an Apple or a Disney called, he had a demo tape to play for them. And it was the Yeezus tour. Like, yeah, this is what I could do with my own money. Imagine what I could do for you or with you, with your budget. And wow. He was like, right after that tour, I linked with Adidas. Like, Adidas gave me what I wanted because they saw what I could do. And now he's a billionaire. So. Yeah.
Who's laughing now? So, he's a forward thinker. Like, he's a legitimate forward thinker. Like, people can, he's a very easy target to make fun of, but there's no denying that he sees things before the mainstream. And then he also can make things be in the mainstream, especially when, now.
When people say, a friend said this to me, when people say, you know, it's not checkers, it's chess. They just kind of say that, like, oh, you know, it's not checkers, it's chess. You got to think. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, what does that even mean? And a buddy said it to me the other day. He was like, the thing about chess is, because I don't know how to play chess. He was like, the thing about chess is, it's always about insurance. You're not thinking about that move. You're thinking like 3 moves ahead, and are you insured to be able to get there?
Yeah.
You know, and do you have the pieces in place to get to that point?
Yeah.
And I think that explains it more, where it's like, me, the getting to do music, getting to be a comedian, but ultimately being an entertainer, they serve each other, and they've started to serve each other really well. I'm not making a lot of money, but I'm paid my rent. You know, I paid my rent 12 days ago.
Yeah.
And it looks like I'll be able to pay it
next month.
Yeah, you know, and whatever, in 20 days or whatever it is. So, yeah, I think that if you're creating stuff, you know, just don't think about one. If you don't have to, don't think about the money, and two, like, just create big, you know, like,
yeah, and just put it out there. Big,
yeah, think about you know, 3 or 4 moves from now while you're creating this, you know, like, so.
Yeah, that's a good word. It's you know. Not many of us are, or none of us are born knowing how to do these things. And so I've seen a lot of value in putting something out there and then iterating. It doesn't feel great for things to just bomb, but it is helpful. I mean, like right now, I haven't been putting anything out just because most of media cares only about a couple things, as they should.
Right.
And I've probably lost 2,000 or 3,000 followers just because I'm not pushing content out. So I feel that, but also that doesn't matter really. I mean, followers don't really matter to me right now, at least. But I think it's so valuable if you want to create something or be a creator or get out of the rut that you're, if you're humping a cube and you feel creative, or you just got to put stuff out there and tell your friends, like, look, this is what I'm doing. How about some feedback? And like you did, freaking pound the pavement and cold reach out to dudes that, I mean, I've had a lot of success. Like, I mean, some really famous people have reached out to me, but I've also reached out to famous people and they've responded. Like, it helps to have a blue check, but also everyone is a human and we're all people. And so, like, eventually people are going to respond if you have something.
Especially if you have the product. Yep. If you have the product to point to. I think eventually people do respond. And that's easy for us to say. Like, to be fair, it's easy for us to say that.
Yeah.
But I also remember, and I'm sure you remember, when no one knew who the hell we were.
Yes.
You know, and like, all you could really do was just kind of like, oh, I got to make this stupid thing and I got to be ready to bomb and suck it up if I do.
Yeah.
And that feeling sucks. It sucks. That insecurity, that fear of failure. I get it.
and just having releasing it into the world and it being at the mercy of everyone consuming it. That's my least favorite thing. Cause like once you, like I'll write a thing or I'll post a thing. And after that point, there's, I can't control the narrative anymore. Like how people respond to it. And if they hate it or not, is completely up to them. And it's their right to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't even be mad at them if they do.
Yeah. So. I know we're coming up on time, but I do want to briefly ask you about a more serious thing about like what's going on in the country. Have you had all your white friends reach out to you to be, to cure them of their guilt, or what has that looked like the past couple months for
great.
You?
So it's been great, man. Just getting the text messages, the emails, just like communicating how you felt in the last week.
Oh my gosh. I totally wanted to know how you felt the past week about.
Yeah. Oh man. Hey man, just, saw the news. Oh man. God. Hey, you know, here's the thing. I know I'll never understand how you feel. I'm like, you know what? If my house burned down, you'd have a pretty good idea. you don't know. Your house is still there, but I'm pretty sure you could imagine if your house wasn't there.
Yeah.
So you do have an idea. But that's the one thing. Oh, man, you know, and I'll never understand. Well, but yeah, I don't know. I can't get cynical. I want to honor people's intention.
Yeah.
I want to honor their attempts to grieve. Like, I get it. And hey, these are new feelings for some people. So
yeah,
trying to react to these new feelings. And that's a good thing. You know, like it might not be the ideal statement or response or whatever, but they're trying to react.
And it's like it seems like an actual growth pain. Like this is what a growth pain feels like.
It's definitely a new level of consciousness.
Yeah.
You know,
and no one's doing it perfectly.
It is prime foot and mouth season.
Yeah.
Prime foot and mouth season. And you know what? Hey, that's okay. Like this was what helped me calm down and be like, you know what? When my wife helped me realize I was sexist and I was a foot soldier in a sexist society. Hmm. You know what I mean? I wasn't fucking Harvey Weinstein. I wasn't, you know, these lunatics. Epstein. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wasn't one of those guys. I would never. I was absolutely terrible. You know, I was one of those guys. But then I remember like, gosh, after a while, after sitting with her and living with her, being like, oh yeah, that guy in the store, he went directly to you, and I was the one who was shopping for whatever, and he asked you if you needed help.
Yeah,
I answered him totally unaware, and I remember how I felt after she told me that, like, oh shit, okay,
yeah, like, oh, this is in me.
This has been going on my whole life too, and it's still going on, and I'm just here benefiting off it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh shit, what should I do? Let me text all my female friends and let you know. Like, no, it's not.
So you can at least empathize with that end of it.
Yeah. And I get why. So I understand, because I did feel, I immediately thought of all my friends that are girls, all my friends that I work with that are girls. And I was like, oh my God, I need to apologize and let them know I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'm conscious now. And, but that, if they get that text, they're like, oh, great. Good for you. You're aware of my shitty hand.
Yeah.
Like, thanks, dude.
Thanks. You know? I'm still living it, jackass.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, dude, don't text me. Text your guy friends.
Yeah.
Like, don't text me. Like, go fix something.
Yeah.
And that's what I do. I start having friends, convos with my guy friends. Like, hey man, like, why didn't we work with her that time? Uh-huh. Or like, even with myself, I'm like, why don't you know of any female comics?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's, hey, do you know any female comics I could work with? Text me back. I wasn't texting girls that. It's my job. So
yeah.
And I'm sure they would have appreciated my new awareness, and it's understandable, but it's not.
But it's almost making more work for them.
Yeah. Now I got to congratulate you on your new level of Great job, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, there's so much to it because so many people are having to reckon with this new sense of like awareness around, maybe I am treated differently because of the color of my skin. And it's very, people respond to it in a completely different way. And it's hard to know how to nail it and be appropriate. Like you said, like white dudes reaching out to you to hopefully absolve their own guilt. Like speaking as a white dude, nobody can see me, but like it is, I've been hesitant to post anything because I don't want to be inappropriate about it, or I don't want to make it worse or just say things to say things. But the analogy about the sexism thing is, I think, a really good analogy.
Yeah. That's when I was like, oh shit, I'm sexist.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, I'm not Harvey Weinstein, you know, but I'm a guy.
And I have these biases. Society.
And I think sexism and racism, you know, they're the evil twins. They're Satan's twins.
Yeah.
And and it was my job. It's not my wife's job.
Right.
It's my job. Now that I'm aware, it's my job.
Yeah.
Easy.
She sounds like an incredible woman.
She is. She is.
You married up, huh? Just like me.
1,000% married up.
That's so dope. All right. Well, I know we're running up on time, but thanks for sharing all this stuff with me.
Okay, real quick.
Yeah.
Now I gotta interview you. How much time we got left? We got 30 seconds.
I mean, we got as much time as you need.
Okay, now that we're on this subject, just make fun of white pastors for the next week only.
Okay.
That's your duty in all this. Just white pastors only.
Okay. Yep. I can do that.
No black pastors for at least a month. but no, seriously, favorite pair of shoes last 10 years. Let the people know.
Oh, okay. Well,
last decade.
The only, the disclaimer I have is I've only been in the game for maybe 5 years.
I'm all about ubiquity. So it could be an obscure pair of shoes that no one really knows about. Like, I just want to know your favorite pair.
Yeah. I mean, I have a pair I own or any pair out there.
Any pair.
Okay. Shatter Backboard Ones are a grail for me. The orange and black Jordan Ones.
The first ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. With like that have, yeah. Not the white and orange ones, the black and orange ones. Those, the Atmos Safari Air Max Ones.
The brilliant
blue and gray ones. I went to that store in Japan hoping that they had something similar. And I mean, nothing compares to that pack. And then, there's a lot of shoes I can't pull off that I really appreciate. Like, or shoes that I can't afford. Like the, Carhartt M&M Jordan 4s that go for like
those are incredible.
$20,000.
Didn't they release? Oh, there was like a auction, I think, for a pair.
Yeah, well, that was for the blue ones, which are even more rare than the black ones. Oh,
they're even more rare.
Yeah, I mean, I think those go for like maybe $35,000 or $40,000. And then an honorable mention are the Air Mags. I mean, the Air Mags are just so tight looking. You don't like them?
No. I think it might be the Air Max for me.
I mean, that's like an art
and
technology piece.
You and I will, unless, Nike, which they might someday just be able to release them when tech catches up. But
yeah, and those dudes that were sleeping on them on ice, waiting to sell them, immediately go down and die.
Yeah. Nike just blows out the market. Yeah. But I think that's really, I think that was a real, really cool moment. That was overlooked, actually.
Yeah.
Oddly overlooked.
It was. And now it's like a cult / kind of not cult thing where if anybody can recognize those from a mile away and know that they're special.
The self-lacing technology thing, I think, is really cool. I think that's going to be.
Once they can get it cheap enough. Scale.
And it'll happen. 5, 10 years, it'll happen.
Yeah. What about you? I mean, what about like a more accessible shoe?
Oh, man. I mean, definitely the Ultra Boost 1
Yeah.
My nose were, that was a moment. That was a really special.
Because everyone was like, oh, shoes can be more comfortable than they.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was like a new level of
like, comfort. What is this?
Yeah. That no one had felt. So that was cool because I'm getting older. We're getting older. It's cool seeing tech now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shoes. That's what I look for. I'm like, oh man, this is all the R&D that went in. You know, I'm like, I nerd out about this.
Or like the ability to innovate on something that is so saturated, like a sneaker. To come out with something unique like Ultra Boost 1.0 that did blow people away, because I think everyone would had to have been kind of resting in their laurels about like, well, we got Air Maxes, we got Jordans, we got
for sure New Balance,
the Vapor Max
shoe, but it was for old dudes.
Yeah,
and then they Adidas was like, ah, we're you know, we're gonna do it for everyone.
Yeah, they've made a couple really sick pivots that. I mean, Kanye and then the Boost technology. I mean, before they were such a snoozer, like the Stan Smith was.
That was about it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about, I mean, do you actually own, I remember you wearing a Supreme Box logo shirt. Do you actually own a Supreme Box logo?
You know, what's funny. I sold that shirt because I needed money for something. And I was like, this is why I'm an advocate of buying expensive things or buying nice things. I'm actually an advocate of it. Here's why. I needed money. I wanted to buy something. I'm trying to remember what I bought. I think I bought a camera or something.
Okay.
And I was like, ah, God, I don't want to spend my own money on this thing. I don't need it. And I looked at my closet. I was like, oh,
I've got $2,000 worth of t-shirt.
No, I'll just sell this thing and I'll get that thing. And like, boom, I said, like, no money lost. This is almost like barter.
You like free rolled it. Which one was it?
I had it was a navy blue and a red one.
So sick. It's crazy how they made a red box so hyped. For people that don't know, you should go look up Supreme Box logo and look at the resale prices for a basic Gildan t-shirt with a red box on it. I mean, you sold your shirt used and probably got a premium for it still.
I made more than I sold it for. Definitely. And yeah, it's an appreciating asset now. It's like a Porsche.
It's crazy.
Or a Rolex. You know, you buy it for a price and you're gonna make money on it.
Yeah.
So it's a
But you gotta go through the pain of paying resale for it.
You can actually afford it. It's a good purchase because you're gonna make your money back and you're gonna make some house money too.
That's dope. What do you wear these days? Like, what's your actual rotation?
Jeez, I'm just, it's just comfort, man. It's
slides.
It's comfort, practicality, and style. I'm still in the style of shoes. So
yeah.
The Converse One Stars, I love.
Mm-hmm.
This basic One Star by Converse.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a pair of New Balance 993s that I'm really excited about.
Heck yeah.
When I went to Japan and saw kids wearing them out there,
yeah.
I was like, oh
my
gosh.
What is it, a colorway or is it a kind of?
Just the navy blue and white ones. Here, I'm wearing them right now. Just these ones are right here.
Oh, heck yeah. Did you go to the store in, where's that freaking drag that all the streetwear shops are in Tokyo?
In Shibuya?
Shibuya, yeah.
No, I think I went to New Balance there, but I got these like last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got them.
That's the thing. It's like it's been so difficult to put out any content is that people literally aren't wearing shoes anymore. Like, I can't tell you the last time I've gotten dressed up for anything because we're all just sitting here. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Wordsblade, thanks for spending all this time with me. If people want to reach out to you and, you know, with their white guilt or whatever, how can they find you on the internet?
Hey, just, you know, words played, WRDSPLAYED on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Heck yeah. And what about the comedy content coming out next week? Where's that?
Oh, that'll be all on my socials. You'll see all of that stuff.
Heck, so
stay tuned. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm pumped for it.
Fun for the whole family as always. It's going to be, it'll be a treat. It's going to be something you could sit with for hours. So I'm really stoked about
that's
it.
That's dope, man. Well, I appreciate your perspective. It's great to finally meet you, via Zoom And
we'll do this in person someday. Yeah,
we absolutely have to do this in person, but I'll come to you. It's too hot here. So we'll come out to San Diego and have some tacos or something.
Yeah, do it. Bring a family.
Heck yeah. All right, buddy. Well, hey, great to talk to you.
All right, brother. Be safe.
Big shouts out to my dude, Wordsplay, for not only spending the time with me today for the podcast, but also allowing me to use his music for the intro and ad tracks. Follow him on Instagram, Twitter, all the socials, at Wordsplay, as well as on Spotify and Apple Music. Show him some support. Thanks for checking out the Preachers and Sneakers podcast. If you haven't already, please make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating, leave a review. Also, check me out on Instagram and Twitter, at Preachers and Sneakers. You can also go to preachersandsneakers.com for merch, as well as YouTube, youtube.com/preachersandsneakers. Thanks for spending the time with me today, and please tune in for the next episode of the Preachers and Sneakers podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.